Branson stayed near the edges of town as the sun climbed in the eastern sky. He knew that he should return to the chapel, knew that he was taking a giant risk in remaining out and about. The monks would go to his room when they noticed that he was not doing his daily chores. But none of that mattered to Branson now. Nothing beyond the reality of Garabond's death mattered. He couldn't believe the tale those living in what had once been his home had told him. He couldn't imagine that Master Bathalay, scowling as he often was, could be so despicably cruel as to have murdered a man as fine as Garabond. And what of Brother Riandu? Perhaps Riandu wasn't as powerful in the Order back then as he was now, but certainly he would have protested the execution. It made no sense to Branson as he wandered through the shadows under the many trees that marked the outskirts of Pride Town. And yet, he found that he could not deny that which was obvious. The man at the campfire had Garabond's knife. The people in his house were sincere, and why would they lie, given that such a lie might well mark their doom at the hands of this masked stranger who had come banging on their door? Branson knew that they couldn't be telling the truth, that Garabond couldn't be dead, and certainly not by the hands of the brothers who had been his protectors all these years. And yet he knew that they certainly were speaking honestly. He had seen it in their faces. At one cluster of trees, the weary young man plopped down in the shade and leaned back against a white birch. He tried to sort through every memory he had of every encounter even remotely related to Garabond these past 10 years. He remembered Brother Riandu's face on the one occasion when he had mentioned his father, the initial shock Riandu had shown, the obvious discomfort behind his stuttered responses. But what did it all mean? If Garabond was dead, murdered by the brothers of Blessed Abel, what did it all mean to Branson? And for Branson. A myriad of emotions rolled through him, everything ranging from anger to despair to the feeling that he had to run and hide somewhere, somewhere dark and deep, where no one would find him. All the confidence of the highwayman flew from him, and he felt again the helpless little boy he had been.
But what does it matter after all?
He thought again of his absence at the chapel and of the implications should he be discovered. And he shrugged them away. How could he go back there knowing the truth? He would have to face Master Bathalace and Brother Riandu. He would have to demand the truth from them, though he already knew it in his heart at least. And then what? What could he say to them? What explanation could they possibly offer that would make any difference to the realities of their actions? For Branson knew Garabond's heart as well as he knew his own. And if that man was a heretic in the eyes of the brothers of Abel, then the brothers of Abel were simply entirely wrong. Branson found a stream of sunlight flowing in through an opening in the trees, and he lay down staring up at the fiery orb. He wanted the rays to permeate his corporeal form, to cleanse him of the impurities and anxieties, to empty him of his rage and his pain. He closed his eyes, and exhaustion overcame him. He knew at once when he awoke that the day was nearing its end, and that any hope he might hold of sneaking into the chapel unnoticed was long lost. Instinctively, he began concocting possible explanations and excuses to explain the absence of the stork. But then he stopped himself, coming to understand clearly that he truly had no intention of ever returning to the chapel as the stork, of serving the wretched brothers of Abel. He would go back, perhaps, but as the highwayman, formidable and angry and demanding the entire truth of Garabond's fate. He wasn't ready to travel that mental course.
No, not ready. Not yet.
But what was he to do? Branson glanced to the west in the lowering sun, its rim just beginning to brush the horizon. The world seemed so huge to him, and so imposing, and he felt so small and so empty, without anywhere to go, without anyone on whom he could lean his weary frame. No, that wasn't true, he realized. and before he even sorted out the emotion, his feet were already moving, propelling him to the south and west, toward the house of the one person in all the world Branson felt he could still trust. But when he got there, Kaydale was not at home, nor was her mother, and the broken door spoke volumes to Branson as he hesitantly stepped across the threshold and into the dark house. He knew she wasn't there. Her smell wasn't there. The freshness she brought wherever she walked wasn't there, leaving the place dark and cold and empty. His eyes adjusted to the dim light, and he slowly and deliberately scanned the room, afraid as his gaze roamed over every inch of space that he would find the body of his beloved. Nothing was amiss, save the broken door. He saw no signs of struggle, no blood, but they were gone. Branson steadied himself and strengthened his resolve. He had come here thinking to lean on Kaydale. Now, he began to understand that it was likely she who needed him. He would not, could not, fail her. He turned and realized his error immediately as he found a pair of iron swords pointing at his throat.
Easy now, highwayman.
The highwayman noticed a third and then a fourth soldier moving around the sides of the small house.
We knew you'd return and now you're fairly caught. Laird Priday will be speaking with you.
Indeed.
His foot struck unerringly into the face of one, then the second. Before his flashing foot even came back to the ground, his other leg propelled him backward, putting some distance between them. With a sudden surge, the highwayman slashed down diagonally, driving one soldier's sword low and wide. A reversal brought his elbow smashing into the man's face. Even as the man fell, the highwayman came forward. The second soldier, obviously unsure, waved his sword around defensively. The enraged highwayman plowed forward, pushing the man right over. The soldier hit the ground and rolled immediately, trying to get up, but the highwayman crossed to the side and kicked him in the face. As the man flattened on the ground, the highwayman stamped hard on the back of his neck. Then the highwayman turned right, sword leading the way. He meant only to deflect the stabbing spear coming at him from the charging soldier, but his sword sheared the spear in half and scraped the man's breastplate, opening his throat as he came forward. The highwayman had no time to concern himself with the man. Not then, for he completed his circuit and fell into a crouch, facing the fourth and last attacker. The soldier skidded to a stop, clearly terrified. He threw his sword to the ground and lifted his hands in surrender.
Where is she?
I don't...
Kaydale! The young woman who lives here, she was taken. You tell me where, or my sword will free your ugly head from your shoulders.
I do not know.
You lie!
No, please do not kill me. A wife I have, and children. Please, I beg of you.
Your family will bring your body to the Brothers of Abel to be put cold in the ground or to the Samhais for burning. I'll not ask again.
They took her and her mother. I know not where they took the girl, but the mother was given to Bonivagar. She will be tried and killed this night by the adder or the flames.
The highwayman moved his sword tip back and stepped away from the man, his thoughts spinning. He glanced to the west, where the sun was almost gone, then back to the east and south, toward where he knew Bernivagar held his audiences, his trials, and his murders. Branson moved fast to the soldier whose throat he had cut. He turned the man over, fearing the worst, and was relieved to see that he was not dead, and that the wound, though still bleeding, wasn't gushing forth blood any longer. Still, it was a vicious gash, one that would need tending. Branson brought one hand to the wound, the other to the soul stone set under his mask on his forehead. He recalled the lessons of the Book of Gest, the healing hands, and fell even deeper into the swirl of the gray gemstone. He felt warmth in his hands and was amazed to see the wound sealing. He stopped short, though, for he found that the effort was taking from his own control, from the solid line of his own chi. A wave of dizziness came over him, followed by a profound weariness, but he shook it away, reminding himself of Kaydale. A short while later, the highwayman ran off, leaving the four soldiers bound and gagged inside the house's dark walls. The spinning thoughts followed Branson away from Kaydale's house, but as he met every different emotion with the reality that Kaydale and her mother were in trouble, anything other than simple rage was pushed away. Step by step, one thought by one, Branson's mind became focused, crystalline clear, sharpening and narrowing his vision so much that it seemed to him as if he were looking down a long and straight tunnel. The tumult within his mind became something more like an internal buzzing, as if the top end of his life's line of energy was spitting jolts into his head. Moving with a singular focus and complete determination, the highwayman increased his pace, running purposefully, but without any clear idea where he was going. And then he arrived, his head thrumming, the edges of his vision limned in red. Hardly formulating any plans, hardly considering any move he might make, the highwayman looked out through a tangle of twigs and logs at the front of a tall, flat stone. The buzzing did not relent. Sometime later, he felt the heat growing around him, but it was as if the flames were not in proximity to him, but were distant. Without any conscious decision, the highwayman's mind went to the drawer in the desk in the room above his hole. His fingers began to wriggle as if he were rolling a small stone in his palm, but he wasn't even aware of the movement. He felt the power of the gemstone as if he were holding a serpentine in his hand, though of course he was not. But somewhere, within the buzz of his mind, the lessons of the Book of Jest resonated, showing him the way to the same energy the magical stone provided. And he needed it. Though he wasn't even aware of the flames leaping all around him, devouring the twigs and logs. He sat there and stared out at the Stone of Judgment peering around the yellow sheets of fire that flared barely inches from his face. He knew the time drew near. He could see the flashes of movement through the red shield at the edges of his vision. All that mattered was the stone before him, and the man he knew would soon appear atop it. The sight of the great bonfire roaring to life elicited horrible memories in poor Callan, a clear reminder of that night so long ago, a night that she had hoped she would never recall. As if in a dream, she allowed the guards to shove her out to a spot halfway between the fire and the large flat stone. Bonivagar's stone. The snake handler had arrived with the sack and the snake, and Callan felt her knees go weak. Darkness filled her thoughts, memories of the confining sack and the slithering serpent crawling over her, sharp fangs hooking into her tender flesh and pumping in their deadly burning poison. Callan dismissed those recollections and divorced herself from her terror. This was not about her. She was not important. And so she would die this night, and for a crime that she had committed 2 decades before. A crime of passion and not cruelty, a misjudgment of her heart, and nothing of malice. But so be it, because this wasn't about her. This was about her poor daughter. Nothing else mattered to Callan. Not her pain, not the viper that would await her in the sack, not her own death. Were her previous crimes now visiting upon Kaedale? Callan knew that her daughter had played a dangerous game and had, in fact, brought this tragedy upon them both. But Callan couldn't so easily dismiss her own guilt. Had she passed more than her appearances to her daughter? Was there something in them that allowed for such mistakes of the heart? The irony of it all wasn't lost on Callan, because, indeed, hadn't Kaedale's foolishness with this outlaw highwayman been much the same thing as Callan's behavior when she had cuckolded her husband? Her contemplations fell away as a tall and straight figure walked out to the edge of the flat rock, towering over the gathering, seeming identical to the man he had been 20 years before, and certainly with as much and more power than he had then commanded. Bernivagar spent a moment surveying them, his cold gaze freezing with fear any it fell upon. He nodded to the side, and she heard the scramble as men behind her began to ready the sack and the viper.
Callan Duorne, we gather to execute the sentence imposed 2 decades ago. You did not admit your guilt then. You were given your chance to speak, though you said nothing. Now, we will not ask you again. You are doomed by your harlotry, and may the Ancient Ones forgive all of us for delaying the proper justice and gift of your corpse.
He snapped a wave in her direction, and the men flanking her yanked her back so forcefully that they pulled her from her feet. But they stopped abruptly, and Callan followed their looks to Bernivagar, And then, with them, and with all the others, she followed Bernivagar's gaze to the bonfire, rustling and shaking, and taking on a life of its own. Callan's eyes widened in shock as she saw the dark form step forth. Surely the old Samhaste had summoned a demon. One of the dreaded Ancient Ones had come to Haunts to take her body away. He saw the tall form of the old Samhaste, but only in a strange silhouette, for sheets of fire rose up before his eyes. Even with his understanding and mimicry of the powers of the magical serpentine stone, Branson realized that he could not remain within the inferno. If his concentration faltered for just an instant, the fires would set his hair and clothing ablaze and consume him. But he did not falter. He focused on the solitary figure before him. Branson stood up. He forced himself forward through the fire, ignoring the burning branches, ignoring the painful licks of flame. None of it mattered. None of his discomfort, his pain, his potential death mattered. All that mattered was that figure, now the focus of his ire, the symbol of all the injustices and all the hatred, of all the bullying and all the torture. There he stood before Branson, high on his rock. Branson crashed through the side of the bonfire. He stepped into the open in all his highwayman glory, right before Bernivagar, the Samhaste.
You dare interrupt this sacred ceremony! You dare!
Branson drew the sword from his rope belt, but even without the weapon, the murderous intent was very clear on his eyes. He strode toward the rock, and Bernivagar surprised him, for the old man did not back away. Did not show fear.
To challenge me is to challenge the Ancient Ones. Bergen, Esmalak Vetir, Kulin Vorses, Marnodok! Feel the fires of the Ancient Ones!
The ground beneath the highwayman's feet began to slide and churn, and Branson looked down in terror, noting that what had seemed ordinary grass was now smoldering with swirling red lava. He knew that his shoes were smoking, knew that his feet were blistering, but he felt no pain. Not even the bite of Bernivagar's molten fires could penetrate the wall of his rage. Without thinking, Branson jerked his arm up and then snapped it forward, throwing the sword as if it were a spear. His sword struck right through the Samhaste's chest. Bernivagar staggered backward, but did not fall to the ground. It hardly mattered to Branson, for he charged at the man in a great leap that brought him clear of the lava. Bernivagar was not grunting under the blows, and his skin seemed not to give at all beneath the weight of Branson's punches, nor did his old bones crack in protest. Branson looked up to see Bernivagar staring down at him and smiling, as if Branson were but a child, an inconvenience. But Bernivagar lifted a hand and balled it tightly, and lightning-like energy crackled from his fist. Though Branson blocked the blow, he felt the jolt of energy surge through his body, stiffening him. Bernivagar swung again. Branson ducked, leaning low, and with perfect balance, managed to kick his foot against the hilt of the sword protruding from Bernivagar's chest. Bernivagar swung again, and Branson, knowing better than to block the enchanted fist, ducked. But even though the fist did not connect, it sent a jolt of lightning into him. He stepped sideways at Bernivagar, grabbing the sword hilt and accepting another powerful jolt, and then another as he stepped away, turning his back as he tore his sword free. Branson didn't hear the man, didn't hear anything but the anger in his head. He started left, reversed the sword flow suddenly, and spun back right so quickly that Bernivagar was still looking the other way when Branson came whirling around, the sword high and horizontal, level with the old Samhaste's neck. High into the air flew Bernivagar's head, still wearing a smile of calm confidence. Branson was already moving the other way when the body crumpled behind him. He dropped his sword and slowed his movement as he approached Callan and the snake, motioning her to keep still. The snake hadn't struck yet, and it seemed as confused and overwhelmed as everyone else in the area. Branson found a place of calm as he slipped between Callan and the viper, moving low and staring the frightened snake in the eye. He moved his right hand across before him, and the snake's head swayed in concert. His left hand snapped out quicker than an adder's strike, seizing the creature right behind its triangular head. Branson allowed the snake to wrap itself around his left arm as he stood up, offering his right hand to the woman and pulling her to her feet. The snake seemed to calm, and the highwayman gently set it down where it rushed into the forest.
You and you!
The highwayman looked at the soldiers who had dragged Callan onto the field. The men looked at each other and both edged away as if thinking to run. But Branson lifted his sword as if to throw it, and both froze in their tracks.
On your head, if any harm comes to this woman, I will see you dead. All of you. Any who harm this woman will feel the wrath of the highwaymen. That wrath is boundless, I assure you. I know your faces now. Where is Kaedale?
Laird Priday took her. He took her!
On my life, she will not be harmed.
He sprinted through the streets of Pride Town. He charged into the courtyard of Chapel Pride, hardly slowing and brushing aside the one young startled monk who made a move as if to try to stop him. The main doors were open, but the highwayman, knowing this building intimately, moved to the right-hand wall and to the small door set at its far end. This one, too, was unlocked, and Branson charged through. He crossed the room above his own dungeon to the door to the main corridor. Branson kicked the door open and leaped out into the hall. A pair of brothers confronted him at once, one holding high his shaking fist, clenching gemstones, Branson understood, and the other waving an iron short sword so ill-cared for and infrequently used that it showed rust all along its black blade.
You would be wise to escort me to Master Bethalaise, and if you try to use that gemstone, I assure you that your head will bounce to the floor beside it.
The man thrust his fist forward a bit in an attempt to be menacing. Branson's left hand snapped forward, clutching the man's wrist and yanking him forward. His right hand cupped over the gem-holding fist, turning it down and bending the wrist. Now it was Branson's fist that held the gemstone. Even as he pushed the monk away, the other, inspired by the sudden action perhaps, leaped forward and plunged his sword at the intruder's chest. A slight turn by Branson had the blade going harmlessly by, and Branson locked the man's sword arm tight against his side and sent his free hand, his balled fist, crunching into the monk's nose. The other young monk stood there transfixed and obviously terrified. That fear only heightened when the highwayman snapped his magnificent sword out, putting its gleaming tip close to the trembling monk's bare throat.
To Bethalaise at once, or I leave you dead on the floor.
The terrified monk scurried away, Branson close behind. The door to Master Bathalace's chamber burst open.
What is the meaning of this?
Bathalace was not alone. Riandu, sitting across the hearth from him, also rose. Closer to the hearth, Father Jarek sat slumped in a chair, appearing oblivious to it all.
You dare to enter this holy place?
It is no place that I have not been many times before.
Bathalace stared at him hard, searching for a clue, but he needn't have bothered, for in that moment, Branson reached up with his free hand and pulled the mask and the gemstone from his head.
Do you not recognize your pet idiot, Master Bathalace?
Stork! It is impossible! How can this be?
Branson came forward suddenly, sword tip lunging close to Bathalace's throat.
I have no time for explanations.
We took you in! We showed you mercy.
Shut up. Mercy?
You dare.
Mercy? You allow me to clean your chamber pots, and I am to fall on my knees in gratitude.
Stork, we were kind.
None of it matters. I need you now, and you will help me.
You are a fool.
An idiot, perhaps, if I was to believe the opinion of Master Bathalace. But it matters not. None of it. You are going to help me now, to repay me for the murder of Garibald Womack. Yes, I know all about it. I know what you did soon after taking me in as your slave.
He was in possession.
Shut up! I know everything there is to say on that matter. And the only reason that your heads are not rolling on the floor now is because I need you. Fail me in any way, and you die, and all of your brethren in this chapel die also. Everyone!
He studied Father Jarek as he finished, the man who had been in charge of the chapel on the day when Garibald had been murdered. Branson thought to go over and cut the man's throat to show these others how serious he was, and he did take a step in that direction, but just one step. Then the highwayman stopped and pushed the thought out of his mind.
To what gain?
Having passed that test, Branson turned back to Bathalace and noted that the man shifted his glance just briefly to glance over Branson's shoulder. Alerted, the highwayman dipped suddenly and lashed out with his foot, catching the creeping monk in the face. Both Riandu and Bathalay started for Branson at that moment, but they hadn't a chance and were backed again by the gleaming tip of the leveled sword.
I am long past mercy, Master Bathalay. Hesitate again, and a monk will die.
He pointed his sword at Father Jarek.
Hesitate again, and he will die.
What do you want?
You and the Stork are going to pay a visit to Laird Priday.
They entered the well-guarded keep at the rear of the castle, and those guards who met them moved back at the unexpected sight of the Stork. Branson looked up at them and smiled stupidly, his head rolling, and that only intensified their disgust and drove them further aside.
The Laird is engaged.
This is more important. Take us to Laird Priday at once.
It would not be wise to interrupt.
Do you begin to understand the importance of this? The highwayman is within our reach right now, and any hesitation will cost us this one chance we have to put things aright.
We understand fully. The death of Bernivagar is no small thing.
The death of Bernivagar?
His head lopped from his shoulders this very night by the highwayman. He appeared out of the Samest fire, as if summoned from hell itself, so said the onlookers. Half the town saw it. He walked through Bernivagar's magic, and not even the Ancient Ones themselves could stop him.
Bernivagar dead this very night. That only strengthens our need and desire to speak with Priday. Admit us at once, you fool, before the holding is destroyed by the hands of this outlaw!
The sentry led the monks past the surprised and curious looks of the other soldiers. A grand stairway swept up from the ground floor to a balcony that lined the left-hand wall. From the other end of that balcony, the stairs climbed to the higher levels of the tower. The foursome climbed the first flight to the balcony and started along with the sentry, pausing at the door in the middle of the wall. Branson turned as the door opened to see a man well known to him come out of the room. Bonnegran gave him only a cursory and disgusted glance, then turned to the soldier, but Branson could not tear his eyes from the imposing warrior. The monks moved away from him, but he didn't notice.
Stork! Keep up.
Finally, he broke the spell and turned, just as Master Bathalay swung around, fist up high.
Bonnegran! To arms! The Stork is your highwayman! Seize him!
A streaking bolt of lightning erupted from Master Bathalace's hand and slammed him hard in the chest, throwing him backward. He tightened his focus and forced his chi back into alignment. He used his Jester 2 understanding and his soul stone, countering the effects of the jolt. And he did it all in the blink of an eye. On instinct, Branson dropped low and the sentry who was charging from behind flipped right over his bent back and tumbled down, but not before intercepting Master Bathalace's second lightning blast. Branson went around and thought to stand to meet the charge of Bonnegran, but then stayed low instead, kicking one foot right into the leading foot of the warrior. Bonnegran tripped off to the side of the moving Branson and stumbled forward, but recovered quickly, purposely running into the wall to secure his balance. He spun around ready to meet Branson's charge, but Branson wasn't charging. The highwayman leaped onto the railing of the balcony and then sprang from it just ahead of another of Bathalace's searing lightning bolts. Branson's muscles propelled him up and out as he lifted his chi to lighten the resistance against that great leap, making it seem as much a flight as a jump. He soared across, catching the railing of the next descending staircase and pulling himself over it in one fluid movement.
Get him!
I'll kill him!
Branson ran to the top of the stairs and then a few feet along the next balcony before again leaping to the top of the railing and springing across, leaving his pursuers behind. Below him, as Brother Riandu tended the wounded sentry, Master Bathalay watched that second flight with as much amusement as awe. He lifted his fist, holding the graphite gemstone, and followed the highwayman's course.
And now you die!
Bathalay shoved back and extracted himself from the grasp of Brother Riandu.
What are you doing?
Master, do not! He is just a boy!
You idiot!
Bathalay lifted his arm again, and again Riandu crashed against him, defeating his aim. Riandu wrestled him away from the ledge and toward the wall. Bathalace turned as he fell back, yanking Riandu around him and slamming his attacker into that wall first, then crashing hard against him.
I warn you,
this is not the way!
Bathalace rammed him hard into the wall. Dazed, he hardly noticed as Bathalace let him go and whirled, rushing back to the railing. All the world was spinning for Brother Riandu, all his buried notions about right and wrong. Images of Stork flashed through his mind, of the boys pleading with him to teach him to read, of the filth and disrespect the boy had long suffered at the hand of the generous brothers of Abel. He saw Bathalace lifting his arm to loose another lightning bolt, lifting the edges of his mouth in a smile that struck Riandu as truly wicked. He pushed himself out from the wall.
Master! Stop!
And indeed, the Master did hesitate and half turned to regard Riandu's charge. Master Bathalace tried to get out of the way or to brace himself, but wasn't successful. Riandu plowed into him, both of them going hard against the balcony railing, which buckled under their weight. Bathalace tumbled over the edge, and Riandu stood waving his arms in an effort to keep from falling. He did manage to do that, then looked down in horror at his superior lying on his back on the lower floor, groaning and barely moving. Out of the corner of his eye as he leaped to the next balcony, Branson saw the fall of Bathalace. It hardly registered because it hardly mattered to him. He saw a figure on the last balcony above rushing through a doorway. The highwayman leaped out and high. He caught his balance on the railing of the top balcony just as the dark figure disappeared into the room and the door started to close. Two strides and a dive had him there in time, shouldering the door open before the locking bar could be secured. Branson tumbled into the room. He came up fast, kicking the door shut. Branson jumped up, his back to the door, his sword at the ready. There stood Laird Priday before him, stripped to the waist and easing behind the side of a great canopy bed. Branson could have had him dead in one leap, he knew, but he had to hold. For on the other side of that bed stood Kaydale, wearing only a sheer nightdress, her hair disheveled, her face streaked with tears, and her head back awkwardly, twisting to avoid the knife that was firmly held at her throat. Behind her, eyes gleaming with open hatred and a wildness that Branson had never before witnessed, stood Renark.
Could it be? Let her go.
The highwayman is this creature? All my holding has held its breath in fear of this damaged half-goblin thing? Oh, a dangerous little boy now, aren't you?
Priday reached subtly toward his mattress, under which he always kept a dagger. Branson noted the move and pointed his sword at Priday threateningly, but held his advance.
He loves this one, my liege. Yet another victim claimed by the weakness of the heart.
Branson steeled his expression at that.
Is that not so? Will you charge at me, brave highwayman, and cut me to death? Will you slay the Laird of Prideholding? No doubt that is your desire. But is it above the price that such an action must cost?
As Renark finished, he slapped his free hand across Kaydale's forehead and pulled her head back.
I'll have your sword, highwayman.
Branson didn't move, didn't breathe. He stared at his helpless love, who shook her head, or started to, before Renark tugged her head back viciously and pressed in the dagger.
Be reasonable, boy. Surrender your sword to me and I will let the woman live. Else she dies. You will live with that image for the rest of your days, short though they will surely be.
Branson looked at him, at his extended hand, though he was too far away for Branson to hand him the blade.
Come along now. Put it on the floor and slide it across to me.
Let her go or you die!
Do you think we are afraid of death, foolish boy?
Your sword!
Branson had no answers. Kaydale was doomed if he lunged for either the Laird or Renark. He couldn't get to the old man quickly enough, and he knew without doubt that Renark would put his knife to deadly use without hesitation.
Boy, on my word, the woman will live. Surrender your sword now before my patience comes to its end.
Branson searched his thoughts and his recollections of the gemstones, but found no answers. There were no answers. He forced himself to stand straight, then bent and placed the sword on the ground and kicked it across to Laird Priday. Branson stared at the pair, hardly paying attention to Priday, who scooped up the fabulous sword and readied it.
Now, move away from the door.
Branson hardly heard them, keeping his focus on his helpless love and on the wretch who held her and who seemed so full of glee at the thought of tearing out her beautiful throat. A spasm nearly knocked Branson from his feet then, as his emotions threatened to break the concentration that allowed him to hold himself in check. He tightened his grip on the soul stone and forced himself, for Kaydale's sake, to regain his complete control. His line of chi burned brightly within him, excited by anger and terror. He could see it clearly as he closed his eyes and looked inside.
Move aside! away from the door.
He kept his eyes closed, kept his focus on that line of burning energy. He brought his hands down together in front of him, cupped his free hand and clenched the soul stone all the tighter. His chi was a tangible thing to him at that moment, a real line and not an imagined one, like a wire that held him together, like a strong cord that kept him upright like a spear. Branson fell even further into himself.
I'll not tell you again, boy!
Behind him, the door broke apart under another heavy blow, but Branson didn't hear it. The young man pictured a part of his life's energy blowing out from him into his cupped hand. He collected it there and felt its weight, felt its tingle.
Move, boy!
He pushed aside Kay Dale's gasp.
Kill her!
Branson's eyes opened and he thrust his hands out toward Kay Dale and Renark. And with that movement, he threw his collected chi, a javelin of his life's energy, a bolt of his inner strength. A tangible energy crashed into Renard, and his legs buckled, pulling Kay Dale down behind him hard to the floor. Pryday leaped, sword jabbing for Branson's chest. Branson's left hand slapped the tip aside at the last moment, and he turned to counter, but this was no novice he faced, but a trained and seasoned warrior. Pryday retracted the blade and thrust again, and though Branson again managed to slap the side of the blade, the Laird deftly twisted it, cutting a gash in Branson's forearm. Branson realized that Kay Dale was hurt. Pryday struck again, and this time he got the blade through enough to poke a hole in Branson's side. He leapt back and he felt a jolt behind him that nearly had him flying forward to impale himself on Pryday's blade as the door got smashed again.
Well fought, boy, but you have no chance.
To drive his point home, he tried to drive the sword home and might well have succeeded had not the door burst open behind Branson, startling them both. Branson turned purely on instinct, leaning back, arms out wide as he came around. He only half registered the flying, spinning axe, soaring in now for his chest as he came around. And still he leaned, bending his knees, head going back so far that he looked through eyes turned upside down and saw Pryday coming in at him. The darkness flickered before his eyes, but Branson did not consciously register it as the spinning axe. He went down so low that his shoulder blades brushed the floor, and then every muscle in his body reacted to his demand, swinging him back upright, his legs straining to pull. He immediately went to a defensive stance and started to turn sideways, expecting an assault from Banagran in the front and Pryday behind. But Banagran, his eyes and mouth opened wide in a silent scream, did not approach. And before Branson even glanced back at Pryday, he understood why. For there staggered the Laird of Pride Holding, mortally wounded, Banagran's axe buried deep in his chest. Branson dove to the side of the room to Kay Dale, whose throat was pouring blood. Beside her, Renard twitched, and Branson absently pushed him aside. For he posed no threat, the young Gestatune knew. Branson's spear of energy had ruptured Renard's chi, had shattered the line and sent it into uncontrollable spasms. The irony of it, that Renark was doomed to become the very stork-like creature he so detested, made no impact on Branson at that moment, not with Kay Dale lying so still before him. He could feel her life energy, her warmth, flowing out of her as he fell over her in a hug. He tried to compose himself, tried to bring the soul stone to bear and find some way to heal her. But it was too personal, too horrible, and Branson couldn't find his focus. And he knew that the soldiers were coming in and that Banagran would fly into murderous rage. He pressed the soul stone to her wound and sent his thoughts, his heart and soul into it. But it was too little, he feared, and his trembling hands could not focus the power. Then he felt a hand on his shoulder, and he nearly swooned, nearly broke apart on the floor.
Branson.
Brother Riandu placed his hand over Branson's hand that held the soul stone.
Together, my friend. Calm. Calm is the key.
Branson felt Riandu's energy flowing into his hand and into the soul stone, and used that flow as his own guide. Branson felt his hand grow warm. The blood slowed to a trickle, then stemmed altogether. Kay Dale seemed so pale and so still.
Please.
Kay Dale did not stir. Riandu patted Branson on the back as the young man fell over his beloved. The weary monk rose to his feet and turned. Pryday was dead, he knew, and had known as soon as he had pushed his way into the room. Over by the body, Banagran rose, his face twisted in a knot of rage and confusion. He started toward Riandu and Branson, but the monk stopped him with an upraised hand.
There has been far too much tragedy this day.
One more will die.
Because he was protecting the woman he loves.
The simple question stole some of the bluster from Bonnegran and stopped his approach.
Would Bonnegran, loyal Bonnegran, have done any less?
Laird Priday is dead. Bonnivagar is dead. Renarch lies torn on the floor, and your own master Bathalaze lies broken below. All because of this man, this highwayman.
We gain nothing by continuing this.
Perhaps my satisfaction at killing him will be enough.
Bonnegran started to bend for the sword. He jerked back as a rolling body rushed past, and when it went by, the sword was gone, and Bonnegran glanced behind to see the highwayman standing there, sword leveled and ready to plunge it through Banagran's chest.
You speak of satisfaction. Like my own satisfaction in killing those who maimed and murdered my father Garibald. Like my own satisfaction in watching Bonnegran's own axe tear open the chest of Laird Priday. Like my own satisfaction now, when I see mighty Bonnegran fall dead on the floor. For yes, I know that you were among those who murdered Garibald. Pray to whatever god you serve, Bonnegran, and be quick!
No, Branson, do not do this!
Riando came forward in a rush, pushing past to stand between Bonnegran and Branson.
I beg of you, my friend, this is not the way. You gain nothing by killing him, by killing anyone!
And was Brother Riando among those who murdered Garibald?
Riando paled. All the answer Branson needed. And for a moment, everyone, including Branson himself, expected him to drive his sword through the monk's chest.
Branson!
The highwayman looked past the helpless Riando, past Bonnegran, to see Kaedale propped on her elbows, her pretty eyes open and staring at him, and judging him in this critical moment. And the weight of that judgment forced him to judge himself. He looked back at the terrified Riando and the subdued Bonnegran. He lowered his blade. Early the next morning, Bonnegran studied the frail-looking young man standing before him, his mind flying between confusion, pity, and hatred. This man's actions had led to the death of his dearest friend, and for that, the mighty warrior demanded revenge. To the side of the room stood Kaedale and her mother Callan. They held each other, for they knew what would transpire here. Branson had surrendered on agreement that they would be spared, but that noble action did not lessen the blow they knew was about to fall.
Do not do this, I beg you. There is no gain to be found here in continuing this senseless tragedy.
We have already had this discussion.
The warrior's eyes bored into Branson, who did not look away, did not look down, and did not blink. It all seemed so simple to Bonnegran. He was willing to let the young woman and her mother go free. As for the highwayman, he was fairly caught and guilty of great crimes against Pride Holding. Indeed, crimes that would undermine Pride Holding. Yes. The highwayman had willingly surrendered to Bonnegran with the agreement that Kaedale would be spared, and so it all seemed a simple matter of beheading the fool or throwing him to the flames. But that simplicity was undermined by the spectacle that Bonnegran knew was unfolding right before Castle Pride's closed gates. Hundreds, thousands had turned out that morning to show their grief at the loss of Laird Priday and to shout their support for the highwayman. Dangerous support, Bonnegran knew, and he remembered his own warnings to his friend Laird Priday when Priday had expressed his determination to kill the highwayman. Beyond that, Bonnegran understood keenly that with the power vacuum, religious and secular, in Pride Holding, the state of the holding would be his to wear as mantle or weight when Laird Delaval came to claim the land as his own. Bonnegran's standing would greatly depend upon his actions this very morning. He looked hard at the highwayman and wanted to hate the man. He thought of his dead friend, killed inadvertently by his own hand, and he wanted to blame this man and to hate him all the more. And yet Brother Riandu's words of sympathy and understanding, of seeing poor Branson's perspective in all this tragedy, had not fallen on deaf ears. Would Bonnegran be honoring or doing a disservice to the memory of Priday by executing this young man? Or did it even matter? He looked at Branson for a long, long time.
Get out of Pride.
Brother Riandu stood at the gate of Chapel Pride long after the carriage had rolled out of sight, contemplating the momentous changes that he would have to steward. Master Bathalaze had succumbed to his injuries, leaving Riandu as the highest-ranking monk in Pride. behind the shell that was Father Jarek. Already brothers were on the way from Chapel Abel to discuss the disposition of their church in Pride Holding, which, it was commonly believed, would soon cease to be Pride Holding. For even as Riandu was preparing himself for the inquisitors of Chapel Abel, Banagran and the others at the castle made their preparation for the arrival of Laird Delaval himself, along with Prince Yezelnik, who, it was widely assumed, would be granted the holding as his own under the auspices of Greater Delaval. Riandu couldn't help but smile a little as he considered how greatly the old wretch Renark would despise this takeover by Laird Delaval. But Renark, after all, was now a babbling idiot, a stork-like creature who could not control his movements. He could hardly eat, by all reports, gagging on every bite, and was likely to choke to death soon. Riandu had tried to help with his gemstones, but whatever the surprising Branson had done to Renark was far beyond Riandu's meager powers to correct. Good enough, and proper justice for the brutal Samhaste, Riandu supposed, though he was not completely without sympathy. He could not follow any course of sympathy at that time, though, for Riandu had much to accomplish in the short time before his superiors arrived. They would demand of him a complete report, and he knew that the report would not be viewed favorably if the chapel was not in perfect order. Every brother was hard at work, Riandu knew, and that thought reminded him that he, too, had much to do. He turned toward the chapel, away from the road, but not without one last wistful glance at the long and empty lane. He missed Branson already, and lamented that he had not tried to learn more from the surprising young man. He hoped that the brothers from Chapel Abel wouldn't take too close an inventory of Chapel Pride, because he knew that he couldn't begin to explain his decision to allow Branson to keep the soul stone he had stolen. But Riandu, despite his fears, was still smiling as he considered his decision. Had he ever met a person in all his life as deserving of a gift from God?
Farewell, Branson Garibond.
The simple wagon bounced along the flagstone road, the bumps rolling and soft as the wagon moved along at a leisurely pace. Holding the reins, Branson didn't prod the horses, for he was in no hurry this day. No more than were Callan and Kaydale flanking him. Tied to the back of the wagon, old Dooley the horse meandered along in step.
I never knew the world was so wide.
Callan's eyes were filled with a spark of adventure that backed up her claim.
Wide and scary.
Kaydale hooked her arm under Branson's and moved a bit closer.
Scary? With the highwayman here to protect us?
Branson smiled widely. He didn't look much like the highwayman at this moment, in his simple woolen tunic and sandals, and with not a weapon to be seen. But the black suit was there, tucked neatly under the wagon's bench, and beside it rested his mother's sword. His sword.
And where shall we go in this wide, wide world? To where the wind begins and the gods do battle?
To whatever land we find that are free of battle. And few are those, these times in Hans.
Then to Bear.
Bear?
To the wide blowing sands of the southern lands. To the temple of the Jester Two in the Mountains of Fire.
You speak of places I do not know.
Branson smiled, for in truth, he was merely spouting names that Garibond had told him in his youth and distant references in the book he had committed to memory so long ago.
Are there any places we do know beyond the boundaries of Pride Holding?
There was substance to that question that was not lost on any of the three.
To where the wind begins, then, and where the gods do battle. That is something I wish to see.
And so they rode from the only place any of them had ever known as home, into new lands and new adventures.
The Saga of the First King, Book 1, The Highwayman, is a graphic audio production, copyright 2004 by R.A. Salvatore. Published by arrangement with Donald Moss Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012 by The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. With performances by Thomas Keegan, Eric Messner, Mort Shelby, Alexander Strain, Colleen Delaney, Bradley Smith, Daniel Sontag, Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, Johan Detweiler, Terence Aselford, James Konacek, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Nick DePinto, Patrick Bussink, Kimberly Gilbert, Alyssa Wilmoth, Thomas Penny, Christopher Sheeran, James Lewis, Drew Kopis, Yasmin Twazon, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, Tim Carlin, Michael John Casey, and Ken Jackson. Adapted and directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed the Saga of the First King, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, John Sprunk's Shadow Saga, and Brent Week's The Lightbringer Trilogy. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. The warded man stalks the night, slaying demons with the newly discovered wards of power. But now, a new threat is rising. An old friend, now a bitter enemy. And he has in his possession a weapon that could unite all humanity. Or tear it to pieces. The Desert Spear. Witness the rise of Amon Jardir in The Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear. Available now in graphic audio.
Now we can invade the Green Lands.
Kiss! Kiss, my darling! Come inside!
I remember some things. Others, not so much. And some things I only remember too late.
Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Croix's
Jill Kismet.
I'm for sale, Pericles. Bid high.
Book 6.
Angel Town.
Go to Hyperion. You can be our avenging hand.
What do you remember?
Saul, is he all right?
Kiss!
I'm afraid either way, Davy.
My children! Now is the hour of our glory!
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.